Welcome to Book Hype, and this week we are discussing The Vampire Academy, book and movie. We're going to have like a double discussion going on to make sure we get all the good Vampire Academy stuff that's been going on. I'm Jen, and tonight I'm joined by Karen, Marima, and we have a special guest, Christina. Hello, everyone.
Hey.
All right. So, Christina, welcome to Book Hype. I know it's your first time visiting us, but you're excited about The Vampire Academy, so we definitely wanted to have you on.
Definitely.
Yeah, she's been messaging me almost nightly to discuss the books. As she progresses through them, it's really funny. I love it.
I tore through them.
I do. I get these little messages. I hear my Facebook go off. I'm like, oh, it's Christina. I may be teasing her because she hasn't gotten through all of them yet, so she doesn't know all the good things. But I'm like, oh, you'll have to wait and see.
You've been a very good guide. Like, just wait.
Be patient. Be patient. All right, so let's get started off with what we've been reading this week. Marima, do you want to kick it off? What have you been reading?
Sure. I am back at school, so I'm back in mode of books that people don't care about. But I did read Grim Tales by Philip Pullman, which is like, you know, he's the author of His Dark Materials, and they're kind of these redone fairy tales, the Grim fairy tales, which are really, really cool. I think it's meant to be a kid's book, but you know, in the tradition of Grimm, it's really not for kids. And I have just started reading Disruption by Jessica Shervington, which is her new duology, the first book in that, which is set to come out in March. So that is good so far. And that's really it.
Excellent. Karen, what have you been reading?
This week was insane, so I only got through one book, but I read The Running Man by Stephen King. And it was the first Stephen King book that I ever read, and I don't know if I should have started with this one. It was good, but it was kind of crazy, and there was this one scene where this guy's guts are spilling out of him, and he's, like, tripping over them, and they're getting yanked on things, and I wasn't really prepared for that. But it was an audiobook, actually, and the narrator was really, really good. So that was interesting. Definitely an interesting choice as my first foray into Stephen King.
That must have been weird to listen to that.
It was.
I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, it was. I was cringing and, like, I was definitely making strange noises because it was really visual. And you could really sort of feel what he was going through. Yeah, it was gross. And I have a pretty strong stomach, but it was gross.
I do not think I would listen to an audiobook of Stephen King.
Just now. And Christina, what have you been reading this week?
All right, so I'm pretty sure I finished Vampire Academy 3, and then I read through 4, and then I've also been working my way through B.J. Novak's One More Thing, his book of short stories that just came out.
I actually finished it.
It's really funny. It's an odd sense of humor because it's like inanimate objects kind of gain their own voices, but it's pretty creative.
A lot of sensitive topics that aren't talked about, I think, in such a way. Like, usually it talks about basically the girl was sexually assaulted by someone. And it usually, I don't know, I've read a lot of those books, or some of those books, and they don't address it in a way that's comfortable for everyone to read, and I know it shouldn't always have to be that way, but this book is done in such a way that you can read it, you can understand it, it kind of leaves its mark on you, but not in a horrified, oh my god, I can't read another book like that kind of way. It opens up a lot of doors, I think, and lets you see it in a whole different light and understand it from someone's perspective in a different way. And it's hard to explain if you haven't read it, so I'm sure I'm not doing a very good job of it. But I really, really enjoyed it, and I think it had a lot to say in a non-preachy kind of way, which I think is always really important. So it was a really good book. And then the last book I read is called We Are Liars, and it's by E. Lockhart. And oh my god, it is devastating in a good way, but it's a book that just kind of sneaks up on you and devastates you and you don't expect it. That book is about a family, an incredibly wealthy family who always summers together on an island off of Martha's Vineyard. And there's the grandfather, who's the patriarch, who kind of plays his daughters off of each other. And then the story is really about the grandchildren and how the grandfather's money affects everyone in the family and how he plays them off each other and how that affects them. And you know something has happened, but you don't know what. Because one of the girls has no memory. something happened, and she calls it her 15th summer. That's how they measure, you know, their summers together on the island. So in her 15th summer, something happened, and she doesn't remember what. And so you start off, and she's in her 17th summer. And she didn't go back to the island her 16th summer, but she's had, like, this amnesia all along, and she's giving her things away, and there's just something wrong, and she doesn't know what it is. And she gets really bad headaches, and she gets really sick, and she can't remember what's happened. So in her 17th summer, she goes back to the island, and summers with her family again. And her mother's terrified that she's going to remember, and what will happen when she does remember. So it's so well done that I don't think you really know what happens until it smacks you in the face. And when it smacks you in the face, you're like, what? What? And it's so, so good. And it's a pretty short book. I think it's just about 200 pages, if that. But it's so, so good. And again, so, so, like, shocking in a way that you don't see coming.
But, I want to read that. Sounds so good.
I think you would really like it, actually.
I like E. Lockhart a
yeah,
lot.
I think you would really like it. And it's just, oh, it's so, so good. So those are the three things that I read this week. Again, all really good books. There'll be reviews on all of them up shortly on Hypeable, so you guys can check those out for yourselves. And so let's get on to this week's Book Bites topic. So this one came from a reader, and they left it in the comments for us, and it says, are there any topics or styles you hate to read? For me personally, I do not like to read, like, lyrical books, the ones that are, like, the poem-style books. So, like, Ellen Hopkins, why everybody else absolutely loves her, I don't get it. It's not for me. So I don't really like lyrical books. I don't know. What are you guys? What about you guys? Anyone?
For me, I think I actually really like lyrical books. I think for me, it's like really full-on romance books are really not my thing, as people may have gathered from listening to me on this podcast. And as for styles, I think I'm like fairly open to kind of any style as long as it works. But, yeah, like, full-on romance is really the only thing I think now when I'm on the spot, it's, like, hard to know, that I find off-putting to the point of I don't want to read it.
Okay, anyone else?
I'm not sure there really is anything for me. I mean, there are definitely things I prefer, like, I prefer to read fantasy and that sort of thing over realistic books, but I can't really think of anything that I absolutely hate to read. I'll pretty much try anything once.
I agree with that. I don't particularly like lyrical, but if it really takes me into the story, then I'll pick it up. As for topics, like, I tried reading Stephen King's The Gunslinger this summer, and that was just, like, mind-blowing, weirdly metaphorical and stuff like that, and it was really hard for me to get into the story until about like 3/4 of the way through, and I was like, who's this character, what's going on? So I prefer romance. Marma and I are completely different, but
that's what I like. Oh, we love each other. Yay.
Yeah, we overcome our differences.
Okay, so let's get on with our discussion, because I have a feeling this one might take a while, of The Vampire Academy. So first of all, let's rate the book, which is buy, borrow, or don't read. So, Karen, I will let you start.
Buy it! Buy 6 copies. I really, really liked this one. So I would definitely say buy it, even if vampire books aren't really your thing. It's really different, and it's just really good. Give it a shot. I think you'll like it.
Okay, Marima.
Yeah, I say buy it. Again, I think I would just preface this whole discussion with, if this is your sort of genre and this is your thing, I think you'll really love Vampire Academy. If it's not, you'll hate it. So, you know, you need to kind of be in the mindset to just enjoy it. And, then I think it's worth buying it. It's a fun read.
Okay, Christina?
I actually thought about this. Buy the first book in, like, hard copy, and then buy the rest of them on a Nook or a Kindle or something, just because I feel like the rest of them don't really measure up in quality, but the first one does a really good job, even if just being a standalone book.
Okay. I say buy it. I've really enjoyed the series, and I'll be honest, I was not down with reading any more vampire books, because I read the Twilight series, and I was like, no, done with vampires. Like, I don't need any more vampires in my life. They're cut off. And then all this stuff came up with the movie, and everyone kept talking about it. And I had a bunch of friends who had read it, and they're like, no, 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 it's different, it's different. You have to check it out, you have to read it. So I finally kind of caved and read it, and then I read them all in 1 week. Because they are truly different. And they are, while they are vampire books, their mythology is very different, and the whole idea of it is just different, and I really enjoyed that. And I enjoy the writing style. You know, there's a lot of snark to be had in those books, and that's, I find, always really entertaining and fun. And strong female characters, which is really nice. So that's why I say buy it. And so let's talk about the writing overall in the books to kick this off, and then we'll get into characters and all kinds of other good stuff. So the pacing, what did you guys think about the pacing? I thought it was really well done. I didn't ever feel bored in the books, and I didn't ever feel like things weren't explained enough and they were going too fast. I thought she did a really nice job with the pacing.
Yeah, you kind of get put right into the story from the beginning. There's not a whole lot of lead up to it, but everything kind of makes sense. And she does do a really good job of explaining it without just kind of dumping all of this information on you. And it goes by so quickly enough that I know I read this book in like 2 days. Like, I just read half of it, and then the next night I read the other half because I couldn't put it down. And it's just really engaging, and the fast pace really allows you to get through it quickly.
I think the pacing was great. You know, you get right to the point of themes, really. But this was pointed out to me, and something I really noticed as I read the second and third and fourth books, is that by the time you get to the second book, she doesn't really explain it right off the bat, but she'll go through and be like this, and then be like, oh, this happened in the book one, and how, here's how it all went down. And if you've just read the first book, then you don't really need to know that. So it's a lot of exposition as you get through the books, but it's just because you remember it from reading them so quickly.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But also, I think there are some moments in Vampire Academy where there's a bit of an exposition dump of information. And, you know, that's fine. Like, I understand that a writer has to do that. But I think because we're in Rose's head, sometimes it's like, oh, and then this happened, but we don't talk about that. And then this happened, but we don't talk about that, which broke it up a little bit for me. And I found that a little bit jarring as I was reading it, because I think the rest of it was very well paced.
Mm-hmm.
See, I forgot about the exposition dump, because that was my first comment after I had read them all together. I was like, but I already know all that, and I would skip like that stuff. So that's just true. See, once you've been away from it for a while, you forget that that happened. But now right. You reminded me. So what did you guys think about the writing style?
It was really fun. I liked it a lot. I think Rose, as a main character, was so sassy and tough. She was really cool, and I think it sort of lends itself to making these books realistic in terms of it being sort of like a high school setting. But at the same time, like, I don't think it was trying too hard. It was really funny, but it didn't go over that line that I think sometimes books can go over.
As I read it, I just kept thinking, I'm so glad I'm not in Lissa's head right now, because I feel like the contrast between the two girls and just how they operate would be so different that I much prefer Rose and her snark and bite. Little vampire joke, bite.
Very good. Oh, yes. Very good job.
Unintentional.
Meryl loves her bad puns, so.
I don't know, Karen, don't out me. They'll know that all the bad jokes are mine. They'll know they're all mine. Yeah, I love Rose. I think she's really funny. And I agree with what you were saying before, Jen. I think that the snark of the writing is, in a way, what sort of makes this book so good. Because it could very easily drift into just sort of a tedious, like, oh, it's a supernatural high school and, oh, there's romance, la, la, la. But because of the voice that Rose is given and the voice that she gives to the events that are happening, it kind of cuts through a lot of that. And I think that's what makes it so enjoyable for even someone like me who is, you know, I've made no secret that I'm really not a fan of vampire books. And, you know, I could do without some of the romance elements in this, but because the rest of it is so funny and really clever, really cleverly written. It's got something for everyone. Yay.
Yay. I agree. There's not a lot of the angsty melodrama that you sometimes get. I think it's all done with, you know, snark and a wit. And she keeps it moving, and there's a lot of things that maybe you don't see coming in the writing. Like, when certain characters die. Like, I didn't necessarily see those things coming, and it was done kind of regretlessly. Like, she did it, it was done, there was no coming back, and that was it. And so I think that was really an interesting take on how to write this kind of story, because so often that doesn't happen. Like, there aren't necessarily casualties and things that go along with these stories that are told. So I thought that was really... I enjoy that about her writing, because it's making the right decision because it's right for the story, not because it's right for the reader. Which, mm-hmm. in the end, it becomes right for the reader anyway, because you learn to love it for what it is. Or you learn to hate it and still feel passionately about it because of what it is. So I just enjoyed that about her writing. It's kind of like, you know, I'm going to do what I have to do because it's right for the story. And I think that's always fantastic when an author owns that and sticks to it. All right, so let's talk about some characters, because we talked about Rose a little bit. And I do love Rose as a character for lots and lots of different reasons. Primarily, she's snarky and fun, and we are in her head the whole time, which is kind of a fun place to be, because being in her head means we also get to see a little bit of what's going on outside of her world with Lyssa when Lyssa's away from her, which is a nice touch, because that's not something you normally get to do. And Rose kind of owns who she is. You know, sexually she owns who she is, and she owns her toughness or her vulnerability as well. So she has this balance of what a teenage girl should and could be, you know, and that's, again, not the typical, like, heroine in the YA story. So she's kind of unique in some of those ways, and that was really enjoyable for me to read. And just kind of be in her head and experience that as she experienced it. So what do you guys think about Miss Rose?
Oh, yeah. Rose is fantastic. And I think Rose makes the books worth reading, even if it isn't your kind of thing, because the character is just so well done. And like you said, there's such a great balance between Rose and Lyssa. And I know we'll talk about their relationship in a little bit, but I think that's my favorite part of the books. But, yeah, I think she's such an interesting character because... Again, she could have gone in a very different way that, you know, in a sense would have been much more conventional for young adult fiction, but Rochelle Mead chose to make her this very strong but, like you said, also vulnerable character who, you know, is highly flawed but quite upfront about that. And she's so funny, so you got to love her.
I agree with that. I think the way she portrays certain things that happen to her are very realistic of, you know, a teenage girl in her situation, and her relationship with her mom, and just that dynamic is very true. And also, sorry, I lost my train of thought. She knows she has flaws, and she knows that she, like, doesn't really want to fix them exactly. Like, she'll own up to it, but she won't really do anything to change it, which I think is interesting, until she finally grows to realize that some things are necessary to change.
Yeah, I think balance is just really the best way to describe her. And sometimes when you have a really strong female character, they tend to be unemotional and kind of cut off. And I sort of think of, like, Katniss, where she is very tough, but at the same time, like, she really closes off all of her emotions, whereas Rose, she doesn't really have that barrier, and she kind of just says everything that's on her mind. And a lot of times that is, like, that tough, snarky stuff, but, you know, she does cry and she does have feelings and she does want romance and, you know, other things. But I think that, you know, balancing those two can be really, really difficult, and with Rose it works out perfectly.
Right, so let's talk a little bit about Lyssa, because Lyssa's kind of the other main female character in the story, and their relationship is really interesting for lots of different reasons. The connection that they share, the fact that Rose feels like she has to protect Lyssa at all costs, and that she thinks Lyssa's a little bit more fragile, and in a lot of ways, she is, because of what she's going through and doesn't understand. So how did you guys feel about Lyssa?
I love Lyssa. I didn't really think I would like her as much as I like Rose, but I really, really do. And I think it's because she has a really interesting dynamic, too, in that she's one of the most popular girls in school, and yet she's, like, genuinely kind, and she really cares about people, and she really notices things about other people. And to see her up against Rose, who is, you know, they're polar opposites, but for some reason, the two of them just really work together. And I think that it was another way to bring balance to a character that could have been very stereotypical and really wasn't because of her personality and how kind she was and even some of the darker moments she had in the book.
I think she really struggles with that identity of being a royal power in this universe, but also, you know, being best friends with Rose and not and kind of being an outsider at this point. She knows who she has to be, but she doesn't really like it, I don't think.
Yeah, I think for me, again, what I like about Alyssa is that she is, yeah, she doesn't fall into the trope that you would expect. Like, on the face of it, when you look at these two characters, Rose is the strong female, quote-unquote, and Alyssa is the damsel in distress. And it's, there's so much more than that, and I feel like sometimes Alyssa gets a bit of a bad rap from the fandom because everyone just loves Rose so much. And I think she is definitely, it's more difficult to love Alyssa because of, you know, we're in Rose's head and sort of some of the things that happen with her. It's, she's not as instantly likable as Rose is, but she's just such a great character. And like Karen said, there's sort of the two flip sides of the same coin. And yeah, their friendship and their relationship is why I would tell people to read these books. Like that in its essence is what they are about. And, yeah, it's so interesting to see, as we'll talk about later, some of the ramifications, I suppose, of how close they are and this bond that they have, but it makes a very interesting reading.
So, as we pointed out, they do have a really deep friendship and a bond and all of these things going on, and sometimes that helpful for Rose to have, and sometimes it's an invasion of Lissa's privacy. So what did you guys think of that whole idea of the bond and how we got to see inside of Lissa's world even when Rose wasn't there? Was it an effective writing tool, or was it, did you enjoy it or not?
I think it was really effective because it shows through Rose's point of view how Lissa is dealing with these changes and coming back to school and everything like that. It's not what Lissa's thinking exactly, it's how Rose is interpreting it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
No, I totally agree with Christina. I would say for me, it's they're the more difficult passages to read because the whole time that I'm reading it, I just keep thinking like, oh, invasion of privacy, like what are you doing, crossing boundaries? But it's very interesting to see Lissa's actions as interpreted by Rose as she's watching them. And I think for the reader, it's pretty easy to read between the lines and see all the things that Rose is missing. But that makes it, you know, that's kind of enjoyable because then you feel like you've got one over on the narrator, and that's fine. But yeah, I mean, you know, there are some boundaries there that maybe don't apply if you go to a supernatural vampire school, but in real life would be worrying.
I found this part really interesting because although I completely understand it as an invasion of privacy, and I do agree that that is the case because she's in her head and seeing her like making out with a boy and stuff like that, and it's definitely wrong, but at the same time, I really liked it because it meant that Rose cared so much about Lissa and keeping her safe and protecting her that she was willing to sort of piss off her best friend if it meant she knew what was going on. And I think a lot of times that was sort of misguided because she was worried about Christian when she didn't need to be and that sort of thing. But in Rose's mind, I can completely understand why she would be like, I need to protect her. She's not going to like this, but if it means she stays safe, then, you know, I'll get yelled at and she'll get over it.
Mm-hmm. She's very sacrificial for Lissa.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit more about Lissa. She had a couple things going on, and it's not just in this book, but throughout the whole series. She's very capable of using compulsion, which isn't typical. She's more, or it is typical, but she's excessively more powerful than most others at it. And she also has the issue of self-harm, which comes up after she's used too much of her power. So those two things can sometimes go hand in hand, because if she uses an excessive amount of compulsion, then she ends up with the self-harm issues. So how did you guys feel that those fit into the story? Was her compulsion something that was really interesting, as, like, a character trait? And how did you guys feel the self-harm was handled?
I just have to say, Jen, because you're the only one that will get this, I haven't read Vampire Academy in a really long time, and when I was reading this, I just kept being like, oh, the fiery heart. Like, oh, it's the same.
No, it's not.
you know what I mean? I recognize this.
Yep.
But anyway, that's a little Bloodlines reference for you fans that have read the more books. Yeah, the compulsion is super interesting to me. I think the compulsion is what makes it, in a way, more difficult to like Lyssa, because even though you can understand why she's doing it, it's her use of it seems it's more obvious that it's for self-gain, whereas, you know, Rose overstepping the boundaries with their bond is more for Lyssa's gain. Like, Rose is trying to protect Lyssa, and even though Lyssa says that she's trying to protect Rose, you get the sense from this that, oh, she quite enjoys being the popular girl and doing all of this stuff again. So, yeah, it's a very interesting thing for me. But not so much the power itself, but the way that she deals with it, and the way that they addressed her self-harm as well was interesting, and I would like them to return to that in future books that I have read and already know the answer to whether they do that or not, because, you know, it's not the kind of thing, if you were just reading this, that I think that should be dropped after a book, because it's so important, and it's obviously been going on for a while. So, yeah.
I think it's interesting because the compulsion essentially makes her sick. It makes her mentally unwell, you know, she self-harms, and then she kind of sinks into a depression. And Lyssa doesn't realize it until Rose, who has been watching her spiral downward, is like, please get help. Like, I care about you too much to let you continue to do this to yourself. So just the way they're invertly related, like the more she uses compulsion, the more the sicker she gets, really, is an aspect of the books I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, the compulsion is essentially an addiction. It's like a substance addiction.
Right.
And you know, she gets so lost in that, and that affects, like what you were saying, it affects every part of her life, but especially in her own mental health, I think if you just picked up a book called Vampire Academy, which, let's be real, it's a dumb title, you would not expect that level of depth from a book like this, which I think is why so many people dismiss it, but there's so much more going on in elements like this.
This part definitely surprised me. I really didn't know anything about the book when I picked it up other than, yeah, what you can infer from the title, which really isn't a whole lot. And I wasn't expecting something as deep as this to come into it, but I am so glad that they did it. And I think in terms of the compulsion, I think Lyssa really needed a flaw, because although she has her own issues and stuff, like, aside from this, she really is sort of, like, you know, beautiful and popular and really nice, and I think giving her this problem was something that was really necessary to the story, and I'm glad that they went in that direction because it makes her more realistic. But on top of that, like, the thing with her self-harm is just, I know people who have gone through this, like really close friends who have, you know, done the same thing, and everything that they described in the book, that Rochelle Mead described in the book, was exactly how they told me it feels like for them. And something like that being that well written and realistic and not necessarily like looked down upon by Rose was really important to me. So I don't know if you heard me, Marima, but when you were like, yeah, I wish they would have continued with this, I was like, because that part of the story really surprised me, but it really became something that I wanted to keep reading about and learn more about, because I think it tells us a lot about Lyssa. And in the end, it didn't feel like a PSA, which I was really grateful for. And, you know, at the end of the book, she gets medicine, she gets help, but the problem, at least at the end of this book, I'm like three chapters into the second one, the problem's still there. She still struggles with the darkness inside of her and her thoughts and stuff like that. And I think it's really realistic and important to have something like that in a book like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could infer that this is her set of, you know, her powers or whatever are inclined in this direction, and her use of compulsion and the healing and things like that, the way that they take their toll on her is through this deterioration of her own mental health, and the fact that those powers are not going away, I feel like you could infer that neither will the struggle of her own, like, you know, health go away, because they're linked, like Christina was saying.
It kind of makes sense in that, you know, regard. Obvious, not obviously, but action A happens and therefore action B happens. Like, the more she uses, you know, magic comes with a cost kind of lesson.
Okay, Rumpelstiltskin easy over there.
I really miss Once Upon a Time.
I think it's a good, you know, you pointed out, like, the compulsion is an addiction, and every addiction, you constantly have to be fighting the addiction. It's not like you get better and it goes away and it never comes back. There's always that temptation, and I think that fits for Lyssa in this regard. So there's that. And then let's talk a little bit more about Rose. Actually, let's wrap up with Lyssa, and let's talk about Lyssa's romance, if you will, with the ever outcast Christian Ozera. What did
He's
you
so ask? Dreamy.
Oh, Christian. Who doesn't love a bad boy that's really meant to be good? So what did you guys think of that relationship?
Christian just seems so, like, blah to me for some reason. Like, he doesn't really have a personality beyond biting at Rose every once in a while and, you know, being obviously completely head over heels in love with Lyssa. So that kind of bothers me, because, like, we know so much more about his family than we do about him.
That's a really good point. I didn't think about that before. We do know a lot about his family, and he's sort of, he feels like a product of that rather than like his own entity. So that's, I was going to say, I really like Christian, but now I'm like,
sorry.
No.
Convictions, Karen.
What'd you say?
You have to stick to your own convictions.
I know. Obviously well, not. I mean, I do like him. I think that, you know, he's fairly stereotypical as the bad boy, but I guess what I liked the most was at the end when Lyssa was basically like, yeah, this is my boyfriend and we're going out and I don't care what anybody thinks, you know, I like him and he likes me, so just get over it. And I thought that was just a really good message. So I think I like Christian and Lyssa rather than just like Christian by himself.
I quite like Christian, but I think that's mainly because of the scene where he sets the guy on fire, which I always find really funny.
Yeah.
Would you guys really consider him a bad boy though? Like, what does he do besides, like, you know?
No, he's the very stereotypical, like, bad boy with a heart of gold. Like, he broods, but secretly he writes poetry in his bedroom, you know?
That's not a bad boy.
Or
that's
the
like
church attic.
Yeah, or the church attic, exactly. I think it's difficult to not like Christian. I think he's a pretty enjoyable character to read, but like you said, Christina, in this book at least, he's fairly one-dimensional. And I think he's mainly there just, you know, it's sort of Christian's introduction in a way. Like, the other characters feel much more established than he does.
All right, let's talk about the final romance, the Rose and Dimitri saga. So we have Rose and Dimitri, and Dimitri is Rose's, you know, he works at the school, which is kind of taboo. He's 24, and Rose is 17. And Rose kind of falls for him unexpectedly, because at first they're kind of at odds about things. Rose is still very, like, a petulant child when she's back and has to do extra training and isn't, you know, Lyssa's guardian right away, and she takes offense to that. And she's a little mad that Dimitri is Lyssa's guardian, and it doesn't always go so well for them. So what did you guys think about the whole Rose-Dimitri dynamic?
I liked it. I think it was obvious that they were meant to have this sort of taboo relationship, but you can't really avoid that with the roles that they were given. But what I liked about it was it wasn't love at first sight for either one of them, I don't think, and it kind of happened fairly organically, and it wasn't annoying in the way that, like, much of the plot of the book totally was at the forefront the entire time, and this was sort of like an aside and sometimes a consequence of what happened, but I really liked that it wasn't the main focus of the entire book, that there was just a lot more other stuff going on.
It consumed her in a way that once it, like, her feelings hit her, she couldn't really get over them whenever she was with him, but she was able to separate them when she wasn't. Like, if you know what I mean.
It was kind of an anger moment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I kind of like it. No, you don't like it. Go ahead, Marima.
Well, no, you talk, Jen. I think that will be more appreciated.
Well, I like the balance of it, because even though it is kind of this taboo thing, it never really goes too inappropriately until the whole lust charm incident, but that's a whole separate story. But in general, he tries very, very hard to be who he is supposed to be, and I think that says a lot about his character in general. He has a set of rules that he is supposed to live by, and he's going to live by them and do the best that he can do, and he's going to be the best Dampier, and, you know, that's kind of his path. And then you throw in this girl who's petulant and crazy and a little bit, you know, mouthy, and it kind of changes him a little bit too. And it's not a change for the worse. I think it's a change for the better in him, because he is always kind of very serious in a sense when it comes to his job. So mm-hmm. Rose kind of changes and affects him in a way that's good for him. And, you know, and he definitely has an influence on Rose that's good for her. And together, they just work solidly together, even though it's complicated and it's, you know, there's so many things that go into that relationship. And, you know, that relationship spans a lot of books. And so it becomes very complicated at points. And it's navigating that and how they navigate it and how they kind of work through it. I think that adds a level to the story. It's not the whole story. It's not strictly about that, which is what's great about these books, is that it has lots of, you know, the books have a ton of elements to them. There's this overarching idea of, you know, what's going to happen with Lyssa. She's, you know, the last Dragomir. How is that going to work? There's Rose, who has to figure out how to get through and be the best Dampier she can be so she can be Lyssa's guardian. You know, there's a lot of things that play into the, you know, not just this book, but the whole series and how that's going to work out. So I think that their relationship is one aspect of it, and that I enjoy it. I think it's a really enjoyable aspect of it. So, it may not be for everyone, Marimo, but in general, hey. I don't really mind it. I enjoy it. I think it adds a nice level to the book without consuming the book.
You know what? Actually, okay. Right now, being where I am in this series, I'm inclined to agree with Marimo for various reasons.
Know exactly why, and that's the whole point of my issues with it.
And you guys are to killing before, me. Right?
And then thinking in retrospect, it really frustrates me because this is Rose's Achilles heel, it seems like, almost. It becomes.
It absolutely does.
She, like, just can't get over her feelings for him, and it blinds her in some respects.
Right. I have to say, I think definitely reading the other books has colored how I feel about it in Vampire Academy. But even in this book, you know, I feel like the relationship between them, you know, older guy you know, it's kind of forbidden and all of that stuff. This is one of the more conventional aspects of the series, and I'm kind of not into that as much. I like when there's more of a twist on it, and certainly as their relationship progresses, there is one storyline in particular that I can't spoil for Karen, but that I really enjoy, where it kind of gets flipped in a way. But there's the introduction of another character that then just makes it super tedious for me to read it, which will be a very unpopular opinion, I know, so people can get mad at me. But it's just because that's really not why I read these books. And it felt sort of extraneous, that whole storyline. So, you know, I think that's just a personal opinion. There's nothing objectively wrong with that, but yeah, it's not really for me.
I like the extraneous, tedious person. I like him better now.
Okay, I like the extraneous person, but I don't like the function that they play.
Yes,
initially.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure we clarified that because.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. No, Jen, please.
I know. I was like, I can see the hate mail. It's coming in bucketfuls tonight.
No. Let me clarify. Yeah, I like the person, just not at the I like the person more, not in Vampire Academy books. How about that?
That's a great statement. I like it.
This is where Jen's killing me, too, because whenever I message her, she's like, just read Bloodlines. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, you need to read Bloodlines.
I said, eventually, I said, when you get to it, you're going to have to get them all at once and just do, like, a sit-down and read them all together. Cause
yeah, but remember that Bloodlines is not finished.
Yeah, and it's painful, because we just read The Fiery Heart, and I'm like, no, wait, no, excuse me, Because The Fiery Heart is much like the third book in this series.
All the books blend together. I have no idea what happens. The big
cliffhanger. Big bad thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And this is the part where we torture Karen.
Wait, how many books are after Fiery Heart?
None yet.
I mean, like, do we know how many books are in that series?
No.
Like, complete?
I don't recall.
Because I might not read them until they're all out.
All out together? Yeah, I was doing good because then I didn't, like, the Fiery Heart's what got me. Damn the Fiery Heart. Anyway, we're off topic, shockingly. All right, so let's talk quickly about some of the other characters that kind of pop into this particular book, because some of them carry through and some of them don't. Let's talk a little bit about Mia, because she has a very specific function in this book, which may or may not change in later books. But Mia's function is the poor girl who wants to be Lyssa. She's the non-rich girl who wants to pretend that she's all that and be the popular girl and emulate royal when she's not royal. Which is hard. I mean, you want to feel bad for her, but at the same time, she makes it so hard.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Like, in the beginning, she's your fairly typical mean girl, and I didn't really care about her very much. Near the end, when we learned a little bit more about her, I was like, okay, you have, you know, a story and a reason, and I guess, like, I understand that. But then she was really unapologetic about everything she did, and I was like, no, you don't deserve my sympathy.
It just kind of goes to show you that even if she is, you know, kind of a not from this upper crust and she's trying to be, you want to like her, but her personality is just so ugly, really, that you just can't.
Yeah, she's so bratty.
Yeah, I always, whenever I think of Mia, I think of the Lord song Royals. You guys really think about it? Like, she wants to be royal, she wants to be, but there's no way, it's just not happening. That's just me. That should be her theme song. And what did you guys think about Victor? Did you suspect it was him at all when it finally came down to it, who the big bad was in this book? Was Victor surprising? God.
I did not think it was Victor, but I knew Natalie was involved from, like, pretty early on. I was like, oh, I bet it's her, because she would have access to, like, the room and all this other stuff. But when it turned out to be him, like, he was sort of controlling her, I was pretty surprised.
I didn't...
I agree. I
didn't see it coming until it happened, and I was like, well, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Well, that's always good in a book.
Well, yeah.
Excellent.
Instead of being like, this just makes no sense.
I
agree. I think Natalie is... I think that's more obvious that there's something up there. Victor, is the bigger surprise, I think, the first time you're reading it.
Yeah, I kind of like how that played out. And then Natalie is spoiler? Such... No, we're fine.
Okay.
Yeah, we're good. Natalie is just such... She's like the very dorky sidekick, and you're just like, wow, you're all kinds of awkward. But she's almost too awkward. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's why she's obvious, because her level of awkwardness is just beyond... And it's also, like, a level of envy awkward. Like, she tries to emulate Rose and Lyssa so much and envy what they have. So you can kind of see there's something there that isn't quite right. So I definitely agree with you guys in that respect.
I think her being so desperate was what really clued me in. I was like, she would do anything, wouldn't she? And that's when I was like, oh, I bet she's behind this.
Oh, wait,
she would literally do anything.
I was gonna say, anything. Which is not healthy.
Going back to, like, how Rose interprets everything, I think Rose highly underestimated her. The entire time she's cast off as, like, the annoying cousin who, you know, just bothers them the whole time. But really, she's been scheming.
This is true. And I think that's what makes her, you know, in a sense, kind of a brilliant character as well is because Rose does absolutely 100% underestimate her, because who's this little dorky, awkward girl? She's just her cousin, you know, whatever. She's not important. She's not relevant in Rose's bigger picture of who the threats are. So in threat assessment, mm-hmm. she rates very low on the list, when really she's, that's why,
yeah, and Christian
so
ranks very high. Does it totally that, backwards. Rose all, is terrible at her job.
That's a whole other, but Christian's, I mean, like an entirely different threat. He presents a right. whole different set of problems.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, if Rose was getting a performance review based on this book, like, she would not be doing well.
This is true.
That is so true. I actually really liked Natalie, though. I don't know if we were meant to or not. And even at the end, when we find out everything she did, like, I did feel pretty bad for her. And I think she was really misguided. And obviously, that's not enough to, like, forgive her of what she did, because she did some really terrible things. But as a character, especially throughout, like, the book, before we knew exactly what was going on, I really enjoyed how awkward she was.
Yeah, I feel bad for her as well. I think you meant to.
Yeah. I'm trying to, like, think of another character to compare her to, but she's just, like, the lost girl that someone realizes can be manipulated easily, and it's just sad that that person ended up being her father.
True. He was very manipulative. I don't really like him. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's talk a little bit about, where are we? How does the Vampire Academy compare to other vampire books? Have you guys read lots of other vampire books? Because I'll be honest, I really haven't, because they're just not typically my thing.
Yeah, I hate vampire books.
Nope.
But I read Twilight once. I read the first Twilight, almost. I almost read it all. And I read all of the Vampire Academy books, so already that's leagues ahead of not finishing a book. I'm trying to think, I guess, like, just other generally supernatural books, just like vampires in general pop culture at the moment. Like, there's a lot of vampire TV shows and everything. I feel like Vampire Academy ranks pretty well, just in the sense of its characters and the issues that it deals with.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I haven't read tons of other vampire books either. I read Twilight, and yeah, I'm familiar with a lot of the usual portrayals of vampires in media and stuff, and I would say that just, like, the mythology, because it's so different than other ones, it makes this book really interesting. You don't necessarily know which direction they're going to go in with all of it. And, you know, just what we were saying before about the pacing and the writing style, I think, just makes it really different from other young adult books in general, but definitely other vampire books, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read all the Twilight books, and I didn't see all the movies, but yeah, I haven't really been in the vampire culture much, but just talking about what makes it different, the one aspect, how their days are flipped, so they're nocturnal, just completely throws me the entire time I'm reading the series. Does that happen to anyone else?
I forget that they do that, and
it
I
makes
just never
sense,
know
though.
What time it is. It totally yeah. makes sense.
It
I'm
makes
like
more sense than other books, like, that I didn't finish, where they just walk around all the time and live in places that have lots of fog. Like, that's not, I feel
jeez.
Like fog is not a good defense against the sun, you know what I mean? Like, if you're a vampire and you've been alive for several hundred years, and the only thing you can think about to not be, like, whatever happens, like, blinged out, is to live somewhere where it's foggy, please. So,
I wonder what book you're talking about.
Well,
oh boy.
Sorry, I've made no secret of this. This
no.
is fine.
I think it, you know, against other books that, you know, I know of that maybe I haven't read, but I've heard lots about, I think this does rank pretty high because of the content in it. The big thing for me with vampire books was always, like, the random blood drinking and how they, vampires always seem so overtly and overly sexualized in books, and I'm just like, this is, like, if I want to read a book about people that have, you know, that are vampires, not a book about vampires that just want to, like, be sexualized and drink blood. Like, I always find that kind of boring. I'm just like, well, there's no point to this, except, you know, to read a sexy book. Which, you know, sometimes that's okay, but in general, it's just not my thing. So I like the fact that these books are smart, and they do have a plot, and their mythology is drastically different from from many of the vampire books and the TV shows and stuff that are out there. Yes, they can be out in the sunlight, but it's preferable for them to be in dark, you know, out at night when it's darker, so it doesn't affect them as much. They drink blood differently, you know, because it's just how they're set up and structured. So I appreciate that more than I do some of the other things that are out there regarding vampires.
I like that when their bites are like drugs and people can get addicted to them. I think that's such an interesting new twist.
That's true, too.
Yeah, I agree. And I do like the way that that is linked with this idea of like sexual promiscuity. I think that's super interesting as well. Like they talk about the blood whores.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that will come back in a later book. Question mark.
I wanted to slap Rose.
What are you talking about? Karen has idea what you're talking about.
What?
Nothing. Karen, close your ears.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of times you want to slap Rose. Let's be real here.
Yep, this is on it. It's a very honest statement right there. All right, so I'm trying to think about a way we can do predictions, because Marma and I know what happens, but... If Karen, like, Karen, take out your headphones, I'll have Christina do her predictions, and then I'll message you when she's done talking, and then you can give us your predictions. Because she's further ahead, and this way no one gets spoiled.
Okay. So, wait, Christina, what book are you up to?
5.
Number 5?
Like, I haven't started 5.
Okay, so if people are listening to this and haven't read up to there, then you need to take them out for, like, a minute as well. Because otherwise you'll be spoiled.
And nobody wants that. Okay, so... Karen, you're not listening, right? I hope. Okay, no response is a good thing. Christina, give us your predictions for the rest of the book.
Okay, Jen, I messaged you this a few books ago, I believe, and you were like, one of these is right, so I'm hoping. Either Lyssa becomes queen and Christian's right there next to her, or Adrian becomes king and Rose is right there next to him. However, after reading book 4 and knowing everything about Rose and Dimitri, I'm thinking Lyssa becomes queen. That's my prediction.
Do you have any other predictions, perhaps?
Oh, God. Okay, sorry, let me think about... Like,
do you have a prediction about Rose's father?
Oh, yeah, that's a good
one. Abe. That completely threw me off.
Oh, okay.
I had no... It was... genius. Let's me speak just genius. I think he's going to... come back in a much more powerful way and perhaps maybe hunt Dimitri or take Rose like under protection somehow. We know he's powerful, but like I don't know to what extent in the States yet, so I don't know.
Yeah, I thought that was a brilliant... I was like dying when you messaged me about that. I'm like, oh, you're so close, because you're like, oh, Abe works for his dad, and I'm like, well, you could say that. Kind of.
Oh, I just thought it was so good. It was so good.
And what about predictions about Dimitri?
Oh, Dimitri. The more I was thinking about this earlier, and the way he sends these love notes to her now, like, I've started book 5 where I've gotten to the end of the free sample on Barnes & Noble's website. He's very disturbing, I would say. He's more of a stalker where we would go to the police and be like, this person is dangerous. I mean, obviously he's dangerous, but I feel like if I were in Rose's position, I'd be scared out of my fucking mind. Sorry, am I not allowed to curse?
That's
all right. No, we're keeping that.
Just like if I had a Strioghi hunting me, basically, I would just, I don't know what I would do. I guess I'd be a really bad vampire, but I hope she kills him at this point. Like, I don't like their romance anymore, and I hope she gets with Adrian because he is cute and rich and can protect her. And that's what I hope happens. I really hope she does not get bitten by him or turned or weakened.
Question, what did you think of Sydney, who was in the 4th book?
Oh, yes, the...
Alchemist.
Yes.
The Alchemist.
Yes. I liked her. I think I like her species or her type. Like, I think I like Alchemist more than I like her, per se. But I think it's really interesting how she's been raised to think that everyone of Rose's, you know, species really is bad and dangerous, even though it's just a completely different mindset, and it's a lot more relatable to, like... I can think of, like, a lot of themes how to relate to real world, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, it's ignorance kind of different people different than us. I think Sydney is going to come back in a big way in that she's going to come maybe back to the States and help Rose or come to St. Vladimir's. Beyond that, I'm not really sure.
Okay.
No. I'm trying to think of what Jen has told me.
I haven't told you much. I've been trying to
You haven't. You've been good. You've been good. I think Sydney's going to come up with a way to, like, help Dimitri become less vicious or something.
Okay. I think those are good predictions. Let's get Karen back.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
So she can give hers, because I think they'll be funny. Yeah. Finally, we can talk about oh, damn it. I was just about to talk about you.
What's the difference? You guys pick on me to my face anyway.
Yeah, I don't know.
And this is why we get Karen. Email.
Okay, go on, Karen. Are you going to read the other Vampire Academy books?
Yeah.
Will you read them?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So what are your predictions?
For anything?
Yeah.
I don't know where to start. Well, I don't think that Rose and Dimitri are going to get together anytime soon because, duh, that's just how it works. There's probably going to be a love triangle. I don't know. What else is there? I hope Lyssa and Christian stay together.
See, you only just started book two, right?
Yeah, like, I have, like, nothing to go on.
It's super hard because there are so many things. I, like, muted my mic so you couldn't hear me making sounds.
Give anything away.
Yeah, I don't want to give anything away.
I also think, well, I don't know, maybe not. I was going to say I think that Lyssa might end up going down a really dark path and Rose will have to bring her back. But then I'm just thinking about what you said, Marima. And so I don't know if that's going to be the case now.
That is an interesting prediction. I will say that.
Okay.
All right. So those are the predictions from the two who have not finished the series, which I think will be interesting to watch you two kind of, like, read the rest of the series and see what you think when it's done.
Yeah, Christina will be done in, like, 2 days.
I know. Yeah, we'll have a follow-up discussion at some point.
Message you nightly, Jen.
Excellent. I do. I love the messages nightly. I'm like, yes, they make my day. All right, so let's talk about the movie, because the movie did just come out about 2 weeks ago now. So I've seen it, and Karen has seen it. And I told you guys what I thought about last week about the movie, and I really did enjoy it. I really thought it was pretty solid in the sense of an adaptation. So, Karen, what did you think? Because I got the I love it, I hate it, I don't know what I think about it message from you earlier in the week. So what did you think?
Yeah, I am so conflicted. Like, literally, I can't decide if I really loved it or if I really hated it, because they did so, like, I'll start off with the good stuff. They did so many things right. I think all the portrayals of the characters were really spot on, but I think Rose was fantastic. Like, they did such a good job bringing her to life, and I noticed that they used a lot of the same, if not necessarily the same, like, passages and dialogue, it was the same sort of situations, and they might have condensed something, but it was all, like, right from the book, I feel like. And they did a really good job with the action sequences and sticking to the main points of the book, which I think is really important. But I just, the writing in the beginning of the movie, at least, I think it got better toward the end, but the writing in the very beginning was atrocious. And I usually don't pick up on that sort of stuff. Or, I mean, you guys know me. Like, I'm pretty easygoing. I like everything. I don't complain. But it was bad. It was like one character would be like, well, 2 years ago we did this. And the other character's like, yeah, I know. And a year ago we did this. And it was so heavy-handed and so obvious that they were just trying to get information to the audience. And it felt so rushed that I was like, wow, I hope this movie gets better, because this is within the first 5 minutes. And I was already kind of not knowing if I was going to stay in the theater.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I was actually thinking of you, Marima. I was like, she is going to be throwing things at the screen.
Well, it's not out here yet, but I definitely will go and see it, just at least for, like, levels of my own amusement. I have to say, like, the marketing of this movie is so weird. the way that they're marketing it, which it already made me concerned from the start. So some of the things that people have been saying about it are not surprising in a sense.
Yeah, I think one of the things people were really worried about was that it was going to be too funny, that the humor was going to really sort of take away from the story, or it was going to be super cheesy. And I mean, there were a few things that I think that they took the humor too far, and it was sort of like, we don't need a funny moment right now because we literally just had one. But as far as the humor goes, like, it was laugh out loud funny in a good way 90% of the time.
You were laughing actually, with it, not at it, is what you know what I mean? It wasn't like, oh my god, he's sparkling with the weird wind chime noise in the background. That was not there. Like, that you're laughing at, not with. But this, I think you're laughing with it, not at it, which is... For most of the time. There's a couple times you're like, oh. But other than that, it didn't have a ton of cringeworthy moments, I think.
That's, completely accurate. And I guess the only other thing that really bothered me was, like I said, the part with Lissa and her dealing with her self-harm was really important to me in the book. And they did that in the movie, but they did it in a different way that I think meant a lot less than what it did in the book, and that really bothered me because I think they had a golden opportunity there and they didn't go with it, and it was really disappointing.
That's why I'm really hesitant to see this film, because never mind the fact it's really hard for me to get to a movie theater from where I'm at in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, but after reading the high quality of the book that it is, it's not like award-winning or anything, but it's a very well-written book. I just feel like that'd be so hard to convey appropriately to screen without making kind of a joke or a mockery of it, or, like you guys were saying, trying to get so much exposition shoved into it to get people caught up.
Yeah, I think what ended up happening was the stuff that was really, really important, like their relationship, the two girls, their friendship, I think was very well portrayed. And I think, the love interest with Dimitri was well done, and it didn't take over the movie like it probably could have, if somebody else had been in charge of it. And I think all the plot points, while some of them were a little bit mixed up, according to the book, which is fine. Sometimes you have to do that with a movie. They were all there. So I think, the basis of the book, the stuff that had to be in the movie, it really was there. And I think they did a good job with it. But it was some of the finer details that I think make the book so good that they missed out on. And maybe that's why it didn't quite hit the target with some of the fans and the critics. I mean, the critics were probably going to hate this movie just on principle alone, but...
Yeah, I think what happens is the movie's also only an hour and a half long, which is short by adaptation standards in a lot of ways. So I think that the more nuanced things, the things that were a little subtler and not quite as critical to the plot, they were in there, but they weren't in there in a way that was representative of the book. So I think that's where it kind of fell short a little bit as well. I understand what you're saying, because I was really surprised how they handled the self-harm issue as well. I was like, wait, what just happened? Because it wasn't like it is in the book. It's hard to even call it self-harm because you don't really get that vibe for it. And I think that was done for a lot of different reasons. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just bring up a topic like that in a film. I think they were a little bit afraid of it, to be honest. So I think that's why they did it the way they did.
Yeah, which is such a shame, though, because the book did it so well in such a way that I think was completely understandable, that I think if they had just done it like it was done in the book, it would have been fine. But you can't really blame them for that, because, I can understand maybe not wanting to, shove that in people's faces. But it was that and some of the other smaller things that I think bothered me more than anything.
Yeah, that happened. Let's talk a little bit about casting, because you guys, even if you haven't seen the film, you've kind of seen who they've cast in some of the stills and stuff. So what did you guys think about casting, especially for, Lissa, Rose, Dimitri, and Christian? Because those are kind of the target four to start with. So what did you guys think about those castings?
I kind of love the casting from what I've seen, although haven't seen a huge amount of the guy that plays Dimitri. I feel like they've been keeping him pretty quiet. Dominic Sherwood, who plays Christian, just looks so perfect. I think he's my favorite, but he's also really attractive, so that could also be why he's my favorite.
He's lovely. I've interviewed him twice, and he's absolutely lovely.
Like, he looks so right.
Yeah, he is. He's, you know what I mean? Really cool. I interviewed him once in person and then once on the phone, and he's just a nice guy. Like, you talk to him and he was just like, oh, I said something stupid. Oh no, that's bad. And I'm like, you're fine, man. It's totally, like, he's just really sweet. And so there are those elements there. I really liked him, and I liked him in the film as well. I thought he did a really nice job playing Christian. And Danila, who plays Dimitri, I don't know why they didn't let him, like, interview ever. Like, he was never available for, and everyone would have wanted to speak to him. So I don't know if there's, like, a language issue, because his native language is Russian. So I'm not sure if they were concerned about that or what it was, but there weren't a lot of, like, Lucy Fry and Zoe and Dominic, they were all available. Sammy Gale, they were all available for interviews and stuff. So I'm not really sure what the deal was with him. But in the film, I think he's very much right for Dimitri. He does the stoic edgy well, and he also does the fighting scenes really well. So yeah. I know, I thought he was enjoyable. What did you think, Karen?
I was a little worried about him because he wasn't quite what I imagined when I read the book, which is not a big deal. I mean, you know, this is a representation of the book, and the actors aren't going to be exactly what you pictured in your head, but I wasn't sure he was quite going to capture his personality right, and I think he did a really good job, actually, and I would have liked to have seen more of him. But I think with what we had, it was actually really good. And people who are maybe worried going into the movie, you know, give them a chance, and I think you're going to be pretty happy. But, I mean, in reality, Zoe as Rose was absolutely perfect. I couldn't even imagine anybody else doing that. And I think Lucy Fry as Lyssa was really good, too. And I really liked Sarah Hyland as Natalie. She did a really good job, especially at the end when she basically had to change her entire personality once she died and became evil. And she just did a really good job with those two drastically different parts that still had to be the same character.
Forgive me, but has Lyssa always had the accent?
No.
Wait, okay. The actress?
They don't really talk about accents so much in the books. Yeah. It's kind of just they're royal. So really, they're going to have an accent.
Is it, like, implied?
I don't know if it's implied. They just kind of went with it because so many of the actors were British. So they just kept them British. And there's nothing
wrong. Do you mean Lyssa's accent?
Yes.
Like, specifically? Yeah. She's Australian, so.
Okay, I'm sorry. She's Australian. I was thinking of Dominic and Ashley. They're both British.
No, I mean, she's Australian, so that might be why, like, her quote-unquote British accent is not so British.
Oh, no, I don't think her accent's meant to be British.
No, it's, like, this bizarro, like, weird. I'm not sure. Her accent is weird. Like,
it just really threw me because I was like, did I miss in the first book, like, oh, Lyssa, who has an accent or something, but...
I think it's just so she stands out, but when you hear it in the... I guess because we haven't seen the film, when you hear it in the trailers, it's very... it kind of jerks you out of it because she sounds so different to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe that's just me, but I just found it really funny because I was like, hey, that girl's been on Australian soap operas.
So, because with Rose, you, like, kind of get that she was born and raised in America. She's got... This is going to be weird, but I really like her voice. Is that strange? She's got, like, a really powerful demeanor about her that I think makes her
Very
gross.
Big weirdo. You asked.
All right.
Oh, boy. It's just a sign that she loves you. It's a sign of affection when she calls you a weirdo, really.
Christina knows this.
I know. I know her feelings. She has a heart sometimes.
I'm right here.
I'm trying to keep up appearances. You're supposed to be a hard ass.
Oh, thanks, babe.
No one can know that you're really a softie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got my back. Okay, should we do some of this feedback?
Yeah, let's do some of this feedback. Go for it.
Okay, so these are all taken from the comment section on our Vampire Academy giveaways that we are doing, so they will be announced by the time this episode has gone up. So Chelsea said, I think it would be great if you could discuss the changes that were made from the book to the movie and if those changes were needed. So I think Jen and Karen, you guys kind of talked about that already, unless there's anything else you wanted to add in.
I think the characterization of Karova was a bit weird. That was one of the things that I found was odd in the movie. Like, I don't know. she was just weird. She wasn't the Kurova in the book. Yes, she had it out for Rose, but there were things that I didn't quite get in her characterization that, I don't know, maybe I missed them in the book, but it was a bit odd, I thought. Other than that, not a lot is drastically changed. I mean, there are little things here and there, as there would be in any adaptation. There's some stuff in the beginning that's different. It's kind of an introduction so you know who all the different, like, the Strigoi, the Dampier, and the Moroi are. And that's a little bit different in the beginning, because it's, I don't think that's in the book, but it's a way to introduce the audience to who the characters are. And while that's different, I think it was well done and fitting. But other than that, I can't think of anything that was drastically different or that I was like, oh my god, what are they doing? Just, to me, Kurova felt off.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think, you know, even though the pacing is really fast in the book, the movie is super rushed, and I think that was, like, the biggest change. Everything felt, like, really condensed, so there was a lot less downtime, which, it's a movie, so that isn't necessarily a bad thing, but overall, I think they really did keep in all the major parts of the book.
Okay, so Kathy S. said, what new books are coming on this topic? And I'm not sure if she means, like, Vampire Academy related or vampire related. There's obviously the Bloodline series, if you're into Vampire Academy. Jen, do you know any other vampire books that are coming out anytime soon?
I'm trying to think. There's like, one new series out. It's by Julie Kagawa. It's in its second book. And that's a very different type of vampire book. It's the Immortal Rules, and it's got the Eternity Cure, the Forever Song, and the Immortal Rules. And that's a very kind of dark vampire book. But other than that, vampires are not where it's at the moment.
They're not the cool kids anymore.
No, they've been ousted. The other thing is the Silver Shadows is coming out, I think, in November.
No, I think it got pushed to July.
Oh, hallelujah. Yeah. Somebody
that's
likes
so
me.
July this year.
Yeah,
that's
so
the new Bloodlines book.
Oh, it got pushed to June. Hello. Oh, no, wait, I lied.
Oh, did it?
No, I clicked the wrong one. Darn it. Hold
on. Oh.
I got excited.
I think July.
Yeah, July 29th here. Yeah, so there's that, and I'm very, very, very much looking forward to that. Yeah. So there are those, and then, but, like, vampires just aren't in at the moment, so spy novels, girl detectives, those are the kinds of things that are assassins.
All right, this is a tangent now.
Sorry!
Okay, cool. So that's, I mean, you know, once you read Vampire Academy, you can go through and read all the rest of Bloodlines and then wait like the rest of us. It's good for your character. So Ladybird said, oh, this is just a comment. Ladybird said, somehow I've always thought the books were cheesy, therefore I stayed away from them. But on one of the episodes of Book Hype, you praised it a lot, and Karen mentioned she read it too and liked it very much. Only then I decided to give it a go. I finished the first book yesterday, and I really enjoyed it. It is easy to read, and you finish it very quickly. It was not what I expected. I will continue to read the series. So that's nice. So Karen, you are an inspiration.
Aww. You're telling someone.
Yeah, it's bound to happen eventually. Okay, and finally, Syl said, I read these books in literally 2 days. I hope they mean just the Vampire Academy and not Bloodlines, because otherwise I do not know how you slept. Love to hear about some of your favorite scenes and character dynamics. So I think I already said my favorite scene is basically when Christian sets that guy on fire, because it just makes me laugh every single time. What about you guys? Do you have a favorite scene from the book?
I think mine would be right after Rose hurts her ankle and Lyssa heals her. I really liked that, because I think it was right after they had a fight, too, and it was sort of like, you know, all of that was in the past, and they kind of just came together and were BFFs again. I like their, you know, the other question is favorite character dynamic, and that's definitely mine. I like the two of them together a lot.
So Karen likes friendship, and Marima likes fire.
This makes total sense, actually.
That basically sums up our personalities. And there's the title of the episode.
I like kind of Rose's points where she's realizing Lyssa's power. You know, it's all new and unexplored territory. So every time she's like, oh my goodness, Lyssa can do this or Lyssa's doing this. It was pretty good because it usually came with some sarcasm.
Yeah, I like Rose's character dynamics as she approaches every situation, because everything's done a little bit differently, but at the same time, she's still always Rose. there's always that intent behind it. There's always that, you know, she has no regrets about how she approaches things most of the time. She's very, like, flat out about it and very clear about what her intentions are. And so I kind of really enjoy that about Rose. So I really like how Rose approaches most things in this book. All right, so that pretty much wraps up this kind of long episode of Book Hype, but we hope you guys enjoyed it.
Talking, we have lots to say.
We did have a lot of thoughts to say
about
this.
You guys
book.
Can blame it on me, the guest.
We will, when you leave. That's exactly what will happen.
All right,
don't you know how this works by now?
The guest always gets blamed. That's why we invite you. No.
Yeah.
So that pretty much wraps up this week's episode of Book Hype. Next week, we will bring you a brand new episode with another guest on. We're going to have author Jessica Shervington on next week. So if you guys have any questions or anything that you would like to talk to her about, please make sure you submit them to us either via Twitter or in the comment section so that we can make sure you guys are included in our discussion with her about her new series and about her other series and standalone books that she's had come out recently. So that pretty much wraps up all of the things we have to say, I hope, because if we have more to say, we're going to be here all night. So until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
I'm Marla.
And I'm Christina.
Bye, guys.